We would like to take a moment to thank our sponsor, Preborn. When a mother meets her baby on an ultrasound and hears their heartbeat, it's a divine connection, and the majority of the time, she will choose life. But she can't do it without our help. Preborn needs us, the pro-life community, to come alongside her. One ultrasound is just $28. To donate, dial #250 and say the keyword baby, or visit preborn.com.
If we lose this cultural war, we're going to have a hedonistic, humanistic society.
Discover the story of the culture warrior, Don Wildman, and how he went head-to-head with Hollywood, Playboy, the homosexual agenda, and the Disney empire. The movement Don started paved the way for Christians to boldly stand for truth and righteousness in a hostile culture. Watch Culture Warrior today for free. Visit culturewarrior.movie.
Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
I love talking about the things of God because of truth and the biblical worldview.
The U.S. Constitution obligates our government to preserve and protect the rights that our founders recognize come from God, our Creator, not our government. I believe that Scripture in the Bible is very clear that God is the one that raised up each of you, and God has allowed us to be brought here to this specific moment in time.
This is Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
Members of the United States Congress, thank you very much. And to my fellow citizens, America is back.
Good morning. It is Wednesday, March 5th, and that applause was the opening to President Trump's address to Congress last night, which can only be described as a triumphant return. He made absolutely no bones about talking about everything he has accomplished in the last 6 weeks, and including in his first administration as well, and even encouraging Democrats to, for one night, just work together, guys. Just like remove all partisan nonsense and at least applaud the things that maybe we can agree on. Listen to this, cut 8.
Democrats sitting before me, for just this one night, why not join us in celebrating so many incredible wins for America? For the good of our nation, let's work together and let's truly make America great again.
But no, the Democrats couldn't even stand and applaud for a child with cancer. They couldn't applaud for a kid getting into West Point, for a U.S. hostage freed from Russia, for the United States building a missile defense system around the United States, progress toward peace, the Abbeygate terrorist arrest that was announced last night. I mean, if you can't agree to stand up for a kid with cancer, then do we have anything in common at all with the left? Well, my good friend Steve Dace just posted on X that I don't think we share anything in common with these people anymore other than a currency. And I think that's an apt remark. And he joins me now. So, Steve, your thoughts on the triumphant return of Donald Trump and the utter idiocy of the Democrats?
I really think last night, Jenna, that we saw a turning of the tide in terms of the cold civil war in America. And, you know, one of my 10 commandments of political warfare is to define yourself before your opponents define you, and define your opponents before they define themselves. And I think you saw this commandment, particularly the latter half of it, Jenna, fulfilled last night. And, you know, your audience has heard me use a phrase in your show before: the social compact is dead. What is that? Well, our Constitution begins with the words, "We the people." All right. So just as the Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath, right? The Constitution was made for the people, not the people for the Constitution. The Constitution is an itemization, a quantification of the values we've already fought together for and installed and instilled. And we declared in our mission statement, known as the Declaration of Independence. And so there's a social compact there, a covenant, a contract that amongst the people of these United States that predates the ratification, even really the wording of that agreement. And that's what's fundamental to any relationship. Before you were married, you dated, okay? You fell in love. There was a social compact there before you quantified it in covenantal form at a marriage ceremony.
And even in any family or any human enterprise where the values become irreconcilable to a point, you don't wish terrible things for one another typically. And even in moments of tragedy, you can find couples who maybe even are on the brink of divorce and something happens to one of the kids that they share a love for, and they put that aside for a moment because that's what takes priority. And we couldn't even see that last night. I mean, they couldn't stand and cheer for a kid with cancer. The first time they cheered the entire night was for a foreign country. And essentially the signal that was sent to normal America, the normie American, right? The guy who picked me up in my Uber here in Dallas yesterday, black guy, listening to Brian Adams, Summer of 69, by the way, great song. He's got a Trump hat on the dashboard of his car. All right. He's normie American. All right. He's not traditionally showing up at CPAC or listening to AFR or the Blaze where I work. Okay. He's not in our club. He's the normie American. He's just like, hey, man, things sucked. We got to do something about it. And I like what this guy has to say, putting his hat on my dashboard. That guy, if he was watching last night, what he saw is a political party basically say to him, we hate your guts. We have nothing in common, and we're telling you this. All right? The fig leaves are removed. Here's our shameful nakedness for all to see. We've got nothing for you. If you're not a loyal viewer of MSNBC or The View, then there's nothing else here. We have nothing else in common. We have nothing else to offer you. We're going to cede the rest of the cultural ground. Now, this can present problems for us on the right, too, that we'll talk about at a future date. But for now, we're going to cede the rest of every political issue and cultural battlefield. We're going to cede all the rest of that ground. It all belongs to Donald Trump and his coalition. We only represent what are the particular viewpoints of those who watch Rachel Maddow and Joy Behar. That's who we are. We're Harpy America. That's what we are. And I was stunned that it was also very clear that the old, and this is, it's clear to people like us, we do this every day, Jenna. But to normie America, the Bill Clinton, see, here's how Bill Clinton's Democratic Party would have handled the tranny issue 30 years ago. They would have gotten rid of women or men and women's sports. They would have done that, okay? And then turned around and called us transphobes anyway, okay? That's what they would have done and boxed us in, okay? And we would have realized, crap, we're surrounded by a bunch of Republicans who really don't believe what we do, so they don't know how to message this. And they thought they were just going to get away with a talking point. Clinton outsmarted them. And now we're left arguing an issue that most Republicans don't have the guts to argue and don't really agree with us on. What do we do? They're not doing that anymore. This is hammer and sickle, fist in the air, fist to the throat. All right. We're in your face. It's a Soviet style revolution. And the deal now is that you will slit your throat or we'll do it for you. That's the deal. And I was blown away watching this, that they could come up with absolutely nothing. And it indicates that here's what it indicates. They don't want to. And the number one thing that Trump's presentation last night proved is that the Democratic Party is simply has nothing in common with the average American, unless you're one of the, you know, a few million people that watches MSNBC and that kind of programming, the 3.5 million, mostly affluent white women with beta husbands who watch The View, the rest of America, we've got nothing for you. And I think that further emboldened the moment at hand we have right now for our side, that we essentially can do in America what you've seen done in the state you moved to, what DeSantis did in Florida, what my governor, Kim Reynolds, has done in Iowa, which is move a state to a hard right, but then govern effectively and then completely marginalize the Democratic Party as nothing but a letterhead throughout that state. There are pockets of this country that we just can't move. The polarization is too strong, but there are plenty of places, as we saw in the last Electoral College map, particularly those Rust Belt states, where the Trump administration now has an opportunity nationally to do to the Democratic Party what was done to them in a few states. And I think that you saw that declared last night. And now it really comes down to what can the, particularly between now and the midterms, what can Trump and the Republicans do to seal the deal here?
Yeah, and Steve Daze, I love that you brought this back to our founding and to our pre-political rights and the social compact that we all shared as Americans before it was codified. Because what everybody has to remember is before we had our Constitution that simply is the system of how our government operates and how it preserves and protects our rights that come from God, we as Americans unanimously agreed on the mandate of the Declaration of Independence, like what government is, what legitimacy is, and the fact that we agreed that truth is self-evident, that our rights come from God, our creator. We agreed on the premise of America, and you do not see that anymore in the Correct. Democrats. I mean, if they can't even stand for a kid with cancer, there's no way that if you got a resolution together to affirm the Declaration of Independence, they would say, oh, it's racist, it's, you know, all this other correct. Stuff. They wouldn't even affirm it.
You're correct. I mean, what war would present itself that people that are tuned into this show right now would look at and say, yes, that is something, that is, our values are on the line and we need to fight for that. Would we share with the people in that, the other half of that, Capitol Dome last night? I can't even imagine what war that would be. I mean, the countries that have the ability to actually threaten us with an invasion, frankly, the people that didn't stand last night have more in common with their worldview than ours.
Yeah.
I mean, the only difference between Zelensky and Putin is their militaries. I mean, tell me. I mean, the irony is J.D. Vance went to Munich before the whole blow up with Zelensky, went to Munich and said, you know, stop acting like Putin. Stop stifling political dissent. Stop acting like Putin, okay? I mean, what in the world do we have in common? If you put the fun in fundamentalism, if you believe the Bible is the word of God, Jesus is who he said he is, and America is an exceptional country because of the values she was founded upon, then tell me what in the world you have in common with any of these people whatsoever, any of them, any of them, nothing. The answer is nothing. I'll answer it for you. Absolutely nothing. I mean, I don't know what shared cause we would have. We would rally together to fight. I mean, imagine you're in the middle of a divorce. Imagine you're in the middle of a divorce and one of your kids gets cancer and the other spouse that you're divorcing is like, I don't care. No, I don't care. Just give me my settlement. Give me what I want. Give me the power I ask for in this proceeding. All right. I mean, We would look at that in any other human setting as vile. And that's what that was last night. It was just absolutely vile. To the Democratic Party, the man was made for the Sabbath, not the Sabbath for man. They're more important than you. Their ideology is more important than the particular human condition. Now, do you know what we typically call organizations who put their ideology ahead of the human condition? I mean, ironically, one of the things Christ was attacked the most for by the Sanhedrin was pointing out how the spirit of the law provided exceptions where the human condition was at stake. Like, for example, David feeding his soldiers on the Sabbath, for example, from temple food, things of that nature that he used right out of the word of God to show them, hey, the spirit of the law is mercy and sacrifice. Okay, and you have to imbue your understanding of the letter of the law with that. We have a word for human endeavors that put their ideology ahead of the human condition. They're called cults, Jenna. That's what they're called, cults. That's what we call human endeavors that put their particular ideology ahead of the human condition. And that's what you saw last night. That's what you saw. This is not a political party. A political party would find ways to understand the occasion, to triangulate, to obfuscate for the moment and just kind of lay in wait when the opportunity presented itself to then take advantage of a moment of weakness and seize power after a bunch of dissembling. That's how political parties operate. That's not what you watched last night. What you watched last night is a religious cult.
Absolutely, Steve.
You will conform.
And you and I talked about this ahead of the election, that this came down to worldview. This wasn't about Democrat versus Republican. It wasn't Kamala versus Trump. This was about a worldview and a demonic worldview versus an actually legitimate movement that actually understands the human condition and wants to better advance freedom and liberty. And so it comes down to worldview. And yet, for the people who are sitting here watching the Democrats, and they're seeing that they don't even stand up and applaud for a kid with cancer, I mean, Kamala Harris still earned a lot of votes.
One of their highest rated hosts went on their main channel after this, Nicole Wallace, who, by the way,
I saw this.
People need to know this too. Nicole Wallace had a desk in the Bush White House right next to my former literary agent. She went on TV right after this and said, man, I hope that kid doesn't kill himself.
It's beyond disgusting. And that clip, by the way, was posted, and it's all over X and social media. My friend Colin Rugg also, I think he was the first one to post it. You can see the whole context there, because she's talking about how this kid wants to be in law enforcement and then says, well, I hope he doesn't have to defend the Capitol from Trump supporters. She went there and then said, I hope he's not one of the six that will eventually commit suicide. I mean, it was so vile and disgusting. But Steve, last question for you before we have to let you go already. Kamala Harris and the Democrats still earn a lot of votes. I mean, so where are we at in terms of a national divorce, maybe, when we're sitting here saying, hey, you know, there's so much cancer going on in the United States, but here, you know, the other political party, or the other, as you said, rightly, the cult and the Democrats or the demons in power, they're refusing to acknowledge that. And yet still, it's not just, you know, the privileged elites and the few, the five people that watch The View that are voting for them, they still get a lot of votes.
And here's where I'm going to actually do something rare and bring your audience glad tidings of great joy, and I'm not being ironic. Okay, Kim Reynolds.
And it's not even Christmas.
Exactly. The Kim Reynolds that America sees today would not have gotten elected governor in Iowa when she was first appointed. She was too far right, couldn't have won. She only got in because the ultimate rhino predecessor she had, who was a Democrat, literally, with an R after his name, got appointed ambassador to China by Trump. And she got put in there and then literally got saved, like right before she got put in there. She had a spiritual conversion. And then what happened is she did such a great job, she just kept getting reelected by wider and wider margins. Ron DeSantis won a state of 21 million people by less than 40,000 votes over a guy, a closeted homosexual, who later on was discovered to be doing cocaine at homosexual orgies. Then he ended up winning by 20 points. All right, there is a residual leftover understanding in the American people of who the Democratic Party is. And then when we seize these, and they capitalize on a lot of, we're the immigrant party, we're the party for women, they're not any of those things. Okay? And so they capitalize on those things. And then when we win narrowly, if we deliver for the American people and therefore isolate the Democratic Party in view, what you saw is Kim Reynolds gets lucky and gets appointed, ends up winning re-election by 20 points. Ron DeSantis wins by about the closest margin a state of 21 million could possibly be won by, and then ends up getting the largest campaign victory in the entire history of Florida statehood. When you isolate these people, the next go around, when you run against them again, when you isolate them out in the public and they raise their hand and say to their constituents and voters, yes, I'm the demon everyone warned you about. It's been me the entire time. There is no phantom menace. There's just menace. When you do that, all right, you can then destroy them in the following election. That's what we need to be praying for right now, that the Trump-Vance administration seizes this moment the way DeSantis did in Florida, the way Kim Reynolds did in my home state of Iowa. Because once you expose the kinds of things that got exposed to however many millions of people watched this last night, the opportunity to get people to vote for you who would have never considered it before, like Trump winning Palm Beach County, DeSantis winning Palm Beach County in Florida, that was the county that started the Florida recount when you and I were growing up. And that was unthinkable that a Republican could win that. And now those are the opportunities that lie ahead of you now if you seize this moment. Because the Democrats allowed the American people for once to see out in the open who they really are. And that's why people like David Axelrod were on CNN freaking out last night.
So well said, Steve Dason. As my good friend Abraham Hamilton III says all the time, don't miss your moment. This is the moment to reclaim America's founding and ultimately reclaim a biblical worldview, a truthful worldview. So always appreciate it. You can follow Steve Dace on X, and we will be right back with more here on Jenna Ellis in the Morning to cover Trump's speech response and more. If we have learned anything from the 2024 election, it's how important it is for us to fight, fight, fight. We also learned how desperately the left wants to fight to take babies' lives, which is why every day Preborn Ministries fights for the babies. Preborn's network of clinics are positioned in the highest abortion areas, fighting for mothers deciding between the life and death of their child. Preborn welcomes these women with God's love and offers them a free ultrasound to introduce their precious baby and hear the beautiful heartbeat. This amazing encounter gives her baby a fighting chance, and the majority of the time, she will choose life. So would you join Preborn in the fight for life? One ultrasound is just $28, and $140 will sponsor five ultrasounds. Babies are worth fighting for. To donate, dial #250 on your cell phone and say the keyword baby. That's #250 baby. Or you can visit preborn.com/AFR. That's preborn.com/AFR. All gifts are tax deductible and Preborn has a 4-star charity rating. Fight, fight, fight for the babies.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back, and we are continuing to discuss President Trump's address to Congress last night, which was really, in my view, very different than any prior address to Congress that a president has given, including Trump. I mean, because the tenor of this was just so different when he's up there, and in previously in his administration, he was confident, he was kind of bullish, he was aggressive, and he seemed very just kind of laid back, almost like he was having fun. And this was a very different type of Trump. And I loved, by the way, not seeing Kamala Harris or Joe Biden up on the dais. That was a welcome relief. We have officially turned the page. But along with what we just discussed in the last segment with Steve Dace and the ridiculousness of the Democrats and their little, it was almost like they were at an auction with their signs being held up, which you got to know that's going to be memeable later. I mean, the memes running around on social media are so funny. This morning, I thought if you've ever been to Fogo de Chão or the Brazilian steakhouse or any of those, and you have the sign that you hold up of like green when you want the steak and the chicken to come over. That's what it reminded me of. And I posted on X, somebody should remind the Democrats that we're not at Fogo de Chão, but they just made idiots of themselves. But all of the stupidity and the distraction, frankly, of the left aside, what Trump was actually talking about and how much he highlighted of what he's getting done, I hope and I pray that over this next term, and especially for the next 2 years, what Trump can do is build the momentum of showing how dark, depraved, and damaging the deep state is, and completely get rid of the administrative state. He can build that momentum so that the American people see that we have nothing in common with the left or with the rhinos, the Republicans in name only, that aren't true conservatives, that aren't on the agenda of actually using taxpayer dollars efficiently and for the purpose that they should be, for some legitimate purpose. And he highlighted how much Doge waste was already found. And I want to play this clip in a second, but I hope that this momentum builds so much over the next 2 years that what ultimately happens is that the midterms are just an absolute landslide blowout, like what we saw in 2024, so that we get a filibuster-proof conservative majority in the Senate and a stronger conservative majority. Notice I'm not saying Republican, conservative. Conservative majority in the House, so that we don't have things happen like the Democrats being able to stop legislation to protect women in women's sports. That's insane. So what I hope happens, rather than, everybody was projecting Trump would just have this lame duck kind of second term, he wouldn't really accomplish anything, and that's really not Trump's style, but that was some projection, which I think, was a valid concern. But he's proving that absolutely wrong. And he's building on this momentum, but I don't think he can actually accomplish completely destroying and dismantling the deep state and all of the corruption that he wants to and that he should, if we don't have an absolutely dynamically successful midterms, that then for the last 2 years, he can sign legislation faster than he was signing executive orders. That needs to be the goal, to build that momentum heading into 2026. So this was one of my favorite moments, actually, where Trump was talking about Doge waste that was found. This is just partial. This is cut seven.
$22 billion from HHS to provide free housing and cars for illegal aliens. $45 million for diversity, equity, and inclusion scholarships in Burma. $40 million to improve the social and economic inclusion of sedentary migrants. Nobody knows what that is. $8 million to promote LGBTQI+. In the African nation of Lesotho, which nobody has ever heard of.
He's just making a mockery of how obvious it is that this is just money laundering. It's not going anywhere to actually do any good things. One of my favorites as well was apparently $29 million is going to fund Arab Sesame Street. And the memes on that one were hilarious. If you asked, you know, Grok or ChatGPT to create images of Arabic Sesame Street, it was hilarious. And it just shows the waste, because who in America is benefiting from this? Nobody. And of course, any rational person is going to laugh at that and is going to applaud, you know, Elon Musk, who was present on the floor. But when the Democrats are sitting there and they can't even applaud, saying, hey, we found waste in spending and we're going to cut that back, then you know that they have a completely diametrically opposed interest to the American people. And it's not party. It's not Republican versus Democrat. This is all about understanding that the government should work for you, the people. So let's welcome in John Cardillo, who is a GOP strategist. And John, I want to get your overall take on this. I think it was a phenomenal speech that not only showcased what Trump is accomplishing and has accomplished already in 6 weeks, but also isolating the left that refuses to get on board with just something as basic as the government protecting the interests of the American people.
Yeah, absolutely. Good morning, Jenna. Always good to be with you. I mean, the proof is in numbers, right? I mean, the CNN poll, I think, had the approval for the speech in the high 60s. CBS or NBC had approval for the speech at 74%. These are our left-leaning networks who most likely have a centrist to left-leaning poll sample. And so that tells you all you need to know. Overwhelming support from the American people, I would argue, 100% approval from the right and center right. You make a good point. Democrats expose themselves by not voting for the most basic things that would benefit the American people, but I'll take it a step further. These demons couldn't even bring themselves to applaud a little boy with cancer who was made an honorary Secret Service agent. They couldn't suspend their anger and their misery and their disdain that they're not going to be able to destroy America for 30 seconds to applaud an adorable little boy suffering a horrible disease. If that doesn't tell America all they need to know about Democrats, I don't know what does.
Yeah, absolutely. And I was talking with Steve Dace in the last segment about this, and he made a great point that the Democrats' evidence last night that they have absolutely nothing in common with the American people in terms of the definition of American people being people who actually care about things like principles of liberty and the genuine founding of our country, the Constitution, the Declaration, you know, some of these things. And so, you know, but I want to talk about Trump's overall demeanor last night as well, because, you know, he seemed to be having fun, engaging. And I think that isolating the Democrats and this contrast between, look at how much we're doing, we're having fun, we're making America great again, you know, giving pride back to Americans to say, you know, hey, I'm actually excited about what's going on in my country. And they just looked so sour and dour, you know, sitting there with their little signs. Yeah. It's like, you know, where does this go from here then? I mean, this is only 6 weeks in. And I think this moment to have this speech was maybe a critical juncture in the overall narrative of how the next 4 years are going to go.
Well, yeah, and I think Trump's demeanor last night was a byproduct of something you and I spoke about either on my last appearance with you or prior to that. Trump is confident. He has a confidence he didn't have in his first term. You know, his first term, when people were telling him, you can't do this, you can't do that, you're under investigation, when he spoke before Congress, he seemed not tentative, but almost as if there was always this in the back of his mind, this thought in the back of his mind of, am I doing this right? Am I doing this the way I'm supposed to be doing it? This is a new guy. This is a guy who went in finally understanding the power of the presidency. This is a guy who has a team that's actually executing his agenda. And this was an incredibly confident guy standing up there who realized, I'm the president of the United States. I'm the most powerful man in the world. The power of my office is enormous. And this is my agenda, love it or leave it. Knowing that most of America is loving it and a bunch of miserable, dour Democrats would rather have walked out of that chamber. But look, the Democratic
Party.
Or
be thrown out.
To your point. Yeah, or run out, right? But to your point, Jenna, the Democratic Party is so far removed from the American people. And you would think after the blowout in November, they'd have gotten a clue. But instead, they went further left. They elected that lunatic from down here in South Florida, David Hogg, a radical leftist, the guy who wasn't even on campus during the Parkland shooting. He was home and rode his bike there to get in front of the cameras. This guy is left of the old leadership. So the Democratic Party is moving left while the rest of the country is moving right. I don't think we're never going to find common ground with these people. And so it's incumbent upon normal Democrats, centrists, to leave their party and come over to our side.
Yeah, so well said. And I don't think that it's incumbent upon us anymore to try to find common ground.
Not at all.
Because if you can't even stand up, like I've been saying throughout this whole program, and I'll repeat it again, if you can't even stand up and applaud a kid with cancer in a moment that surprised him by being an honorary Secret Service agent, if that's
exactly.
Not even common ground, then I'm sorry. I mean, what could possibly be common ground anymore? And so I don't even think that saying, you know, oh, let's reach across the aisle or any of this stuff even matters anymore. I mean, and this is why I'm continuing to say, and John, really appreciate your comments this morning. Thanks so much for hopping on. Before we go to break, I want to make one more comment. But I think this is why this whole, you know, reach across the aisle, whatever, is nonsense, and why we have to move forward for the midterms to say, let's build an even more solid conservative majority in both chambers so that Trump can codify legislative wins and we don't have to try to find common ground with those kinds of idiots that refuse to understand what is right for America and have a basic worldview centered on truth. But before we go to break, I also want to make one more comment that to me personally was fascinating, maybe is a good word for it. And also, honestly, just really a difficult moment, I think, last night. And this came when Trump was commenting on Mark Fogel, of course, and his mom was there, and this journalist that, you know, he got back from Russia, and talking about how, you know, he met Mark Fogel's mother actually at Butler, Pennsylvania. And so in talking about this story, then Trump decides to talk about Butler, Pennsylvania again, and talks about Corey Contempiore, I think I'm pronouncing this right, the firefighter that was killed at the rally. And this was the comment that he made. This is cut 9.
After 22 days in office, I did just that. And they are here tonight. As fate would have it, Mark Fogel was born in a small rural town in Butler, Pennsylvania. Have you heard of it? I just happened to go there last July 13th for a rally. That was not pleasant. And that is where I met his beautiful mom right before I walked onto that stage. And I told her I would not forget what she said about her son. My life was saved by a fraction of an inch, but some were not so lucky. Corey Comparator was a firefighter, a veteran, a Christian, a husband, a devoted father, and above all, a protector.
And Trump went on to say that he believes that God saved his life to make America great again. And I absolutely believe in God's sovereignty, that God saved his life. But this is an interesting moment that I really think that Trump may have survivor's guilt over Corey, who died at the rally. He continues to talk about that. He continues to talk about the assassination attempt and continues you can just tell it's so heartfelt. And as someone, you know, who's been in many conversations, knows Trump very personally, I know that this affected him. And I hope that he is getting really good counseling for this. And I would just ask everyone who's listening to pray for him on this, because that kind of trauma cannot be easy in the midst of everything else he's going through, and that he's standing up for America and getting done. That personally has had to just be something very difficult. And it was really obvious in that moment. We'll be right back with more.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back. And we are still talking about President Trump's address to Congress last night and the difference in worldview between the conservatives and the left. And we have to talk about, though, and notice again, I didn't say Republicans, because we also have to talk about the moral decay within America. And that also, unfortunately, has infected a segment of the so-called right, or perhaps the godless populace. And so I want to welcome in Senator Jay Collins, who's a Florida state senator for the 14th district here in my home state of Florida. And he's had a lot of commentary recently on his X account. I'd really encourage you to follow him, see the videos he posts. And Jay, you know, I think this is a very apt moment to talk about moral uprightness versus moral decay when we're talking about hopefully heading to midterms. And then, of course, the governor's election here in the state of Florida, other elections in states around the country, that it really matters to get good, solid Christians at best, and then at least good, solid, morally upright people that understand why moral uprightness matters to these positions in government. And good morning.
And good morning, Jenna. Great to be on here again. And I've been listening in a little bit with a prior conversation, and love where you're going on this. To your point, America has been blessed beyond reproach. We are so lucky to live in the nation. Even with the problems we face, there is no place that I would rather call home. And I hope and pray that as Americans, people are waking up thankful for what we do have. While not perfect, it is worth fighting for. But to your point, it's about the people we elect. It is about moral fiber. It is about that moral compass. Where you point every single day, do you stand up for the American family? Do you stand up for freedom of religion? Do you stand up for the things that got our nation to be what it is, what our founding fathers forged the nation on? It is so precious, and I think often we take it for granted. You know, if you look at what's happened here in Florida recently, Governor DeSantis is exactly today who he has been since day one. He is a moral, focused leader, knocking things out of the park on conservative values, but it's because he wakes up every morning and knows exactly who he is. You know, our pillars of conservatism are individual freedom, limited government, the rule of law, peace through strength, fiscal responsibility, free market, and human dignity. If we can just stay within those guidelines, imagine how good things would be. You know, I listen to a lot of what goes on right now with the Tate brothers, and I'm sure you saw the video. I really question this. As a man, as a conservative man, as a retired Army Green Beret, I can't stand for bullies, man. I don't like what he does to women. I don't like how he objectifies and treats women. I don't like how he takes advantage of the weak. Those aren't American values. We aren't bullies. We stand up and fight to protect those in harm's way.
Absolutely. And, you know, and I think that the Tate brothers right now are so much in the national conversation because this is a moment, a clarifying moment for the true conservatives who stand up for those pillars and principles that you just discussed, Jay Collins, and then the people who've been taken in by this kind of, you know, machismo sort of bravado and are are using... Well, they haven't been convicted of anything. Well, that doesn't matter. You can still disagree with what they've actually said, what they're literally on video saying. You don't have to platform someone just because what they're saying that's so reprehensible has not led to a criminal conviction yet. I mean, that's not the standard here. And yet we see so many so-called conservative influencers who are influencing voters, by the way, this is why this is important, that are genuinely being misled on how to think through issues like this.
100%. Look, if we lose our way, all of the ground, all of the hard work put in to preserve or protect our country, our state, will go awry if we forget who we are. It's simple. The Republicans, the conservatives have to be on that moral high ground. That is who we are. That is what we're about. And if we just step back, get away from the machismo, get away from X and Instagram and TikTok, and we get off the videos and we just look at the words of what they're saying, the things that they stand for, those aren't right on any level. Would you be proud of your children if they said that? Would you be proud of your parents if they said that? That is not what a leader does, and that should not be a part of the modern conservative party. It does not stand for our values. If we fail this, we're going to fail the coming generations, because we're going to lose our way and this nation will fall apart. It's worth fighting for, but we got to get this right. And that's where conservatives have to stand up. We have to use our voice on these things. It is not okay. And that doesn't mean anything with the Tate brothers is beyond redemption. God's grace is pure, is eternal, and it is there for everybody. And I hope and pray that there's a shift. But what they do right now is not okay for our party. It is not okay for America.
And I'm speaking with Senator Jay Collins. You can follow him on X at JayCollinsFL for Florida. And you're absolutely right in everything that you're saying, Jay. And to say that we have to think through these things from a truthful biblical worldview. And this is a very important critical moment in the state of Florida, and also I think for the country as well. But as we're headed toward a change in leadership with Governor DeSantis being term limited now, there is this tenor, and I feel it here in Florida, and I think that the internal state conversation is saying, okay, Florida has kind of been the ultimate example of what a state should be for the last, you know, 7 years now, and then, you know, heading into the election next year. And there has to be that transition to continue the momentum, just like I think on the national level. I've been doing a ton of interviews this week of people asking me, well, what about like a third term for Trump? Because it's almost like there's this sense of urgency and concern and maybe even fear. Like, are we going to get a leader on the national level as good as Trump? And in the state of Florida, are we going to get another leader as good as DeSantis? And I think that concern is correct, because if we just say, well, okay, Florida's great, we're good, we can get somebody who's not willing to stand up for the fights as much as he is, we're going to then lose ground. So how do we continue this mindset in the state of Florida, but also in the country, to build on the wins?
Well, I think, first off, you got to know where you stand. Where does our true north point? What is it that we think is worth fighting for? We can't fall back on our laurels and be passive. Florida is where it is because we had a leader who pushed aggressively on strong conservative principles. Excellence is a choice. We have to wake up every single day and eat, sleep, and breathe excellence. We have to be relentless in our pursuit of that. And if we do that every day and we understand who we serve, I think this thing's going to be okay. And the right leaders will step up. But in the end, you know, we've got to get people out there. Good people have to run for office, and people who understand what's at stake. We've got to work together to elevate the right people to lead our state, lead our country, and keep us on the right path. There is no guarantee for tomorrow. And if good men, good women stand aside, this country can fail. And, you know, I'm not here for that. It's time for everyone to lead.
Yeah, and I think we've seen how important it is to stand up for truth, to be engaged in civil government, and to take seriously our responsibility as citizens to engage as much as we can in the process. Now, not everybody is going to run for office. I'm grateful that people like you, Senator Collins, are, and that's a wonderful thing. We need more people to do that, and we need more more Christians, every Christian, to engage at every level. And so, so in the last couple of minutes that I have with you, Senator Collins, I want to shift gears here a little bit and talk about the Florida legislative session, because that just started this week, and Florida does still have a supermajority. We kind of went through a little bit of a back and forth battle with the special session, but what is now the tenor? I mean, is everybody coming together kind of as a supermajority, and what are the legislative priorities?
So, yeah, I think right now everyone is hyper-focused. There's been a good calming effect, I think, recently. But, you know, there's a lot to do, right? We look at the world around us. The issues are the same. You know, for me personally, when I ran, I focused on economy, education, safety, security in the community. And I take care of those who take care of us, first responders and military. My focus is the same. So everything I run will fit into those pockets. But we're going to get aggressive. We're going to push back on other nations and what they do in our country and in our state. We're going to, you know, stand up for 2A rights. We're going to stand up and drive better educational philosophy, provide more opportunity, open up our economy in other ways. Those free market, free, you know, conservative principles are what drive us. That's my focus. That's what a lot of my colleagues are focused on. And we got work to do. We're on day two of about 60 days here. And we know who we represent, and we have a lot that we carry with us. This is Florida. We are the free state of Florida, and we lead the nation in many ways. When Florida leads, America wins.
Yeah, so well said. And another, you know, parallel that is going on along with the legislature is that the newly minted Attorney General for Florida, Governor DeSantis's former chief of staff, James Uthmeyer, has announced that there is an open and active criminal investigation into the Tates that we just talked about. And a lot of conservatives, shockingly, are calling this lawfare. I don't really understand that, because obviously, you know, if there's a good faith basis for an investigation, even just based on some of the open comments, it would seem kind of obvious where the direction this investigation should go. But what are your thoughts on the investigation being opened and some of these comments that, oh, this is just lawfare?
Yeah, so I've heard lawfare. I've heard it's communism. Guys, that's ridiculous. Go check their videos. Go check what they talk about. Go check how they espouse for us to live our lives. There's enough smoke right there that objectively there's probably fire. I support Attorney General Uthmeyer in doing this. I think he's a man of moral fiber. He knows what he stands for. No, this is not lawfare. We should check this. And, you know, I have faith in him in that process, and I stand by that. Ultimately, it's pretty ridiculous that we're having that conversation, but let's go back to the first conversation, the moral fiber and decay. We've got to remember who we are. That's not the discussion we should be having. There's work to do to protect this nation. I mean, look at last night. It's not just within our party. They couldn't stand for a 13-year-old cancer victim, our Democratic people on the other side. How heartbreaking for that child to see that happen on national TV, to see representatives refusing to clap, refusing to stand up. It's repugnant. It's horrible.
Yeah, that if that's not in every ad, in every general election in 2026, then, you know, then the Republican Party needs to get new comms people, because I think that just so so signified exactly what they're not standing for. And and I appreciate your comments, Senator Collins, as well on the investigation, because, you know, lawfare. It is also the flip side of that. I mean, it's targeting someone like Trump just because you don't like him and trying to manufacture a case against him. But on the flip side, you don't want to just say, well, you're one of us, therefore we're not going to open an investigation and we're not going to prosecute or investigate, you know, legitimate leads. And that's the flip side of lawfare that we also should not be applauding for any attorney general, whether they're Republican or Democrat. And that's what I see with these people who are suggesting that this is lawfare from the AG in Florida. Well, no, I think the Tate brothers just assumed that, hey, because this is Florida and it's Trump's home state, we're going to get a pass. But no, we need to stand for law and order regardless of who it is. So Senator Jay Collins, always appreciate it. You can reach me and my team, Jenna, at AFR.net.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.
We'd like to thank our sponsors, including Preborn. Preborn has rescued over 200,000 babies from abortion, and every day their network clinics rescue 200 babies' lives. Will you join Preborn in loving and supporting young moms in crisis? Save a life today. Go to preborn.com.